Okay, we are ready to go. Welcome everyone to the Product Launch Formula call here, the Q&A call. And I'm going to be running through, we've got a lot of great questions. I'm going to be running through them. And then we'll also, if you look at the webcast, you can type in a question. I'll be taking some questions there as well. So with that said, I'm going to go ahead and get started. And so basically the way this works is I'm just going to read out the question and then give you my answer and then move through them. And we're going to be going through a whole bunch of them here. Okay. First of all, a couple of housekeeping questions. I tried to group a lot of these questions together and certainly didn't do a perfect job of that. But first, a couple of housekeeping questions. First, I've from Bonnie in Chicago. I've signed up for a mastermind group, but I've not been assigned to any group yet. Did the mastermind group already start? No, they haven't. We'll be we're setting those up now. It's a manual process. We actually go through all these applications or all the mastermind applications, and we try to form them into groups that will have some long-term viability. And of course, there's no guarantee, but we do our best and to create a compatible group based on people's businesses and their experience and even their location and the times that they're available. And there's a lot of variables that go into it, so it takes a little bit of time, and it's a manual process that's done by us. And then basically once we go form the groups, then we send out an email to everyone in the group introducing each other, and we send you all. We also have a short document basically giving you some of the ins and outs of mastermind groups, and, you know, sort of an instruction manual for your group, and then, you know, it's up to you to go and run with it. So we haven't done that yet. We haven't sent those out. I'm not sure exactly when, but it's not going to be too long. We'll be sending out those groups. Okay, another question. Well, I've continued to have access to this material after the 50 days. I have a full-time job and move more slowly than this course is moving. So I'm not sure where the 50 days came from in this question, but yes, basically you'll have access for a minimum of 6 months. And, you know, it'll likely be longer, but that's what we're guaranteeing, a minimum of 6 months access to the course. So that'll give you time to work through it. Okay, moving, those are the couple procedural questions that jumped out at me there. Moving along, I'm planning to do a seed launch first to build up my list. Can you recommend a length of time between the seed launch with version one of my product and the eventual internal launch, which will be the version two of the product? So generally, the way I teach, and you know, these you can do these as you want. You can do free for them and change things around. But generally, the way I teach to do a seed launch is you'll do it as a series of teleseminars. Maybe it's two or three or four teleseminars. And generally, you know, when you're going to do those teleseminars, you probably want to do them at least a week apart. And so it's going when you. So let's say you do even three teleseminars. So that means that you do your internal launch, then, you know, it's probably going to be several days to a week before your first call, and then you spread them out a week apart. That means it's going to be a minimum of 4 weeks from when you do your internal launch to when you finish up doing those teleseminars. And then probably after the teleseminars, you're going to want to take those recordings and maybe edit them a little bit and probably get them transcribed. And so the bottom line is that when you do that seed launch, it's going to take you a number of weeks to actually deliver the product and then have the product put together in a format that's saleable as, you know, for then what you would do with your internal launch or your subsequent launch. And so the question in general, I would do it as quick as possible, basically is what I'm getting at, is you're not going to be able to do your, you know, if you do the seed launch, you're not going to be able to do that next launch a week later or 2 weeks later. I think, you know, the quickest you can do it is probably going to be 4 or 5 or 6 weeks for most people, and I think that's plenty of time. So my answer to that is, you know, do the seed launch, get that product built using your seed launch, and then, you know, as soon as you can get that version 2 of your product ready, then launch that baby. Next question. My first products are limited edition prints of a spiritual nature. Will you go into the handling of hard products versus info or downloadable products? With regards to the launch, there really is no difference between a physical product or an info product or a downloadable product. In terms of the timing of getting the product ready, you know, there's a little bit of difference. Like if it's a digital product, it's usually easier to, you know, you can basically, you know, be finishing the product up right as you launch. If it's a hard product, if it's a physical product, you definitely want to have some product built ahead of time before the launch and ready to ship. So there's that, you know, additional time constraint, and then there's the logistics of the actual shipping of it. You know, so that's a bit of a constraint there. But really, those are just logistical issues. In terms of the actual launch, not much difference at all. In fact, zero difference. You know, you just have to make sure you have your ducks in a row in terms of getting the product built and being able to fulfill it. You know, generally, especially with, you know, with books, CDs, tapes, anything like that, you know, I have someone else do all of that for me. The company is disc.com that I use. There's others out there. But that was actually one of the bonuses I just released, one of the extra bonuses. There's an interview I did with Cindy Taney, who is my contact, my main person that I work with at disc.com. And if you just go to the main Product Launch Formula 2.3 website and scroll down and look at the bonuses, you'll see there's that bonus. It's about duplication and publishing and fulfillment. And it's probably about a 40-minute interview with Cindy, and there's lots of gold in that interview. This isn't something I think I've ever seen covered anywhere in any other product, is the actual some of the ins and outs of the duplication and the fulfillment. And so, you know, there'll be some considerations there, but mostly it's a logistic issue. In terms of the actual launch, the copy, the strategy, the pre-launch content, hitting the triggers, all that stuff, it doesn't matter whether it's a physical product, an offline service, an online service, an online product, a digital product, doesn't matter. It's the same triggers, tools, techniques, and strategies. Okay, next question. From Bonnie in Chicago, says, Bob Serling in his How to Write Copy manual recommends to give a long guarantee. He prefers 1 year. Could you please explain how to do that, since the credit card merchants prefer no more than 30 days? And this is an excellent question, Bonnie. I've found that generally credit card merchants are usually okay with a little longer than 30 days. They're usually okay with 45 days. Or 60 days, or possibly even 90 days. Beyond that, they start to get fairly nervous. So, the question is are you going to do enough volume where they're actually this is where I have to say, you know, I'm not a lawyer, and this is somewhat of a gray area. But I know of people that have done launches and used longer guarantees. And basically, the merchant companies never found out about it. Now, obviously, I have to be careful about actually recommending you do something like that, because I don't want you to go and get in trouble and lose your merchant account. You know, I know that I used to have longer guarantees, and I've had to go to shorter guarantees because of the merchant accounts really, you know, being very uncomfortable with longer guarantees. And my business is big enough where I'm on their radar, so they're going to go look at my guarantee. So, for me, I can't sort of try to slide under their radar. Some other people might be able to slide under their radar, you know, and so that's a question of whether you're willing to do that. Generally, if they have an issue with your offer, they're going to come back and tell you they've got an issue with their offer. It's not like they're just going to shut you down or something like that. So in general, I try to play it squeaky clean in pretty much all areas of my business, and certainly with merchant accounts, but I do know some people that have sort of slid under their radar. Another thing you can do is you can offer a conditional guarantee. So you could say, you know, we've got a, you know, 30-day or 45- or 60-day money-back guarantee, and And in addition, we've also got this one-year guarantee that, you know, if you do this, this, and this, and this, you know, if you go through all the material and do this and that, then, then you get your money back. Generally, the merchant accounts aren't going to have too big an issue with those conditional type guarantees, as long as your main full-out money-back guarantee is the shorter period that they like. Okay. Next question. This one's from, is it Paige? My font here is too small. In Far Rockaway, New York. At this point, I have a sales letter set up attached to payment with ClickBank. Can I just leave it at that? I'm only starting an internal launch with a very small list, so there are no affiliates right now. But we'll do a JV launch after this one and already have ClickBank set up. Yes, you can certainly do a launch with ClickBank. That's not an issue. There will be some issues if you want to go ahead and do a great big JV launch and be able to track people from your pre-launch content all the way through to the sales letter. That can get a little tricky with ClickBank. I'm sure there's a ways to do it, but I haven't ever done it personally. But yeah, you can certainly use ClickBank to run a launch through. No problem. Another question, if we're starting our launch by trying an internal launch with a small list, 200 or so, not very responsive list, and we offer a first piece of content, do we make them sign up again to get the content? And the answer to that is generally no. You know, as long as what you're going to be giving them in terms of this launch and the pre-launch content is in alignment with what they originally signed up for. So, like, if they originally signed up for, learn how to play guitar, learn how to play guitar product, and now you're going to do a product about learn how to play piano, then I would definitely get them to opt into a different list. But if you if they sign up for learn how to play guitar and now you've got a learn how to play guitar launch, then I wouldn't, you know, make them opt in again. If they sign up for a learn how to play guitar and now you're going to do a learn how to play lead guitar, that one would be a gray area. You know, it sort of depends. You might or might not want to have them opt into a different list. You know, it depends. Like, it sounds like in this case, since it's a not very responsive list, I would probably. You know, in that case where you're going to do something slightly different, I would just go ahead and publish that list. You know, if it's a really rabid list that loves you, loves you, loves you, and you're going to do something slightly different, then I would just ask them to opt in, you know, because you don't want to risk your reputation with that current list by having something slightly different. This is a good question. It comes up a lot. You don't want to always be running people through into a different list if the launch you're going to be doing is very similar to what they signed up for. Okay. Now, this is a question from Scott in San Diego. And this question was asked, actually a similar question was asked a couple times, so we might answer this a couple times, but it is a very good question. What kind of story can we use if our story doesn't fit the I'm a lot like you model? The product is a health home study course made by a doctor who has researched like crazy and found a solution to help people with a certain disease. The problem is that he was never a lot like the people he is trying to help. He never had the disease that the course is about. His daughter-in-law actually has the disease, and he's researched a solution because of her. Thanks. Okay, Scott, this is one of those where the answer is so obvious that the problem is you're just a little too close to it. And that's what happens, you know, when you're working on a launch, sometimes you can just be too close to it and not see the obvious answer. In this case, the story isn't I'm a lot like you. It's, I think you're probably a lot like my daughter. My daughter had this terrible disease, and my daughter suffered from this and that and this and the other thing because of it. And because of watching her suffer like that and go through the pain of this disease, well, you know, I'm always been a doctor and I've been a researcher, and so I made it my life's passion to find the cure. And I researched for thousands of hours, and I've tracked down the top experts in the world, and I found, you know, the magic elixir that cures it. It's that simple. You know, the connection can just as easily, it doesn't have to be the person launching it. It can be someone they know. And even if he didn't have his daughter, even if his daughter didn't have the disease, let's pretend his daughter, I mean, his daughter having the disease makes this a very easy one. But let's step back a step and say he doesn't, he just, for some reason, you know, wanted to know more about this disease or wanted to learn or find the cure. Then it could simply be something like, boy, you know, I bet you're a lot like all these other people that I've helped, or I bet you're a lot like all these other people that have suffered this disease, or, you know, through my work I've gotten to know all these people that suffered XYZ disease, and I bet you're a lot like them. You know, you suffer from this and this, this symptom and this symptom and this symptom, and you've had to fight through this discrimination or this, you know, these treatments that didn't work. And, well, you know, after working with so many people and seeing so many people, I decided there had to be a cure, and I went to, you know, to all the ends of the earth and talked to the top experts and spent all my time and thousands of hours researching. And, you know, after all this, you know, this dedicated effort, I found the cure. And the amazing thing is this works, like, almost every single time, and all you have to do is this, this, and this. You know, it doesn't always have to be, I'm a lot like you. It could be, I think you're a lot like these other people that I know, that I've experienced with, that I've helped, that I have empathy with. Okay, next question. I have a large, this is from T. Frank in Edmonton. I have a large list, about 17,000 people, but it is a couple years out of date. I had stopped the business through which I'd built the list. It was a list of people who applied to be web-based mystery shoppers. Is there a legit way to resurrect it without being seen as a spammer, or should I just ditch it and start over? Well, this is a question of, you know, what are you going to publish them now? So it was, you know, mystery shoppers, which is sort of a fairly generic biz op type of thing. You know, what are you going to publish to them now? If all of a sudden you're going to start, you know, the thing you want to start publishing about is growing roses, then, yeah, there's no way to do it without being a spammer, you know, or being seen as a spammer. If it's a related thing, if it's something else about making money online or starting a business online, then the way you would resurrect this list would be to put together some type of, you know, an offer for some piece of free content, what people are calling a money magnet now, and put together some type of a money magnet, something that these people, you know, the people on your list who, you know, a lot of them, their emails will have changed, they're not going to be reachable, they're going to forget who you are, so you're not going to get a great open rate. But of the ones that open it up, what one thing would get them really, really excited? And so put together a squeeze page offering that thing, set up a new list, and then mail your old list. Mail your old list and tell them, you know, say, hey, I'm sorry I disappeared for a couple of years. This is why I disappeared, but now I've got something, you know, that I think you're going to be really interested in. The great news is that it's free. Just go here to collect, go here to collect your free thing. It's and the copy would be something along the lines of, hey, you know, you haven't heard, Sorry, I've been a stranger. It's actually been like a couple of years since I've, you know, sent you any email. Let me tell you why. It's because this and this. And, you know, as a make good, just to, you know, to make things up to you, I've got this really free, cool thing. Go here to get it. And then you send them to a squeeze page. They go and they opt in to get the really cool new thing, and then they've joined your new list. So that's the way you do that. Okay, next question from Sean in Dallas, Texas. Is it better to write long emails, perhaps with a visual subhead breaks throughout, or is it better to write short emails and instead try to drive them to your blog where you can give the longer copy? You know, this really, it's dependent on your list. It's dependent on your market. It's dependent on your ability to write. I would never sit down and say I'm going to write a long email just to write a long email. You know, I've certainly at times have written 900 or 1,200 word emails. I've written some really long emails. But I try to make them as short as possible. If you get a 1,200-word email, I guarantee you that started out as a 1,400 or 1,500-word email, and I went back through and I cut every word and every sentence and every paragraph I could. So I try to make my emails as short as possible, but they still, you know, if there's a job for them to do, they have to do the job. So if I have an email where I think I can write a compelling email with a compelling story, you know, and it ends up being 900 words long, that's fine. I'm willing to go with it. Now, I personally, you know, I think I do pretty well with writing emails, and I think I can get away with writing fairly long emails, whereas some people maybe with not as much experience might have, a harder time engaging someone with that long of an email. So, I mean, one of the things I like to do is I like to vary it. So I like to have really short emails, and I like to have longer emails. I like to mix it up. I like to keep people guessing. One thing you can do that's fairly easy is just track. I mean, you should be tracking. You can track your open rates. You can track your click rates. Even if you're not using HTML email, if you're using straight-up text, you can be sending, have all links go through, link tracking. And then you can track, you know, how many clicks you're getting. And, you know, and the bottom line really is how many, you know, actions you're influencing. So, like, you know, if you want someone to buy something or if you want someone to download something, just track it and see what type of emails are getting the best response. This is one of the easiest things to test. And, you know, if you use Profollow or AWeber, you know, they've got built-in testing. You can split test a longer email versus a shorter email. You can split test subject lines. You can see what gets clicked. You know, the ideal way to do it is, the way I do it is I've got multiple lists. Just because I've been in this business for years, I've got multiple lists. And what I'll do is I'll take one of my smaller lists and I'll split it. I'll do a 3 or 4-way split test. And I'll split, often I'm split testing subject lines. Sometimes it's the call to action within the email. Sometimes it's the length of the email. Sometimes it's the copy of the email. But I'll go out with my smaller list and I'll split test, you know, across 3 or 4 different emails or different subject lines. And then I'll see which one gets the best result. And then I'll take that one and I'll use that when I roll out to my big list. And all of this is very simple to do and easy and built into Profollow. .com or AWeber. Okay, this question is from Dan in Boulder, and I don't quite understand it, but I think there's some good stuff in here that'll get us to an answer. It might not be the answer that Dan's looking for, but I think it might help some other people. Dan says, I'm preparing a very large launch where I will be going out to companies and entrepreneurs that have expertise in industries that are of interest to me. The companies I'm going out to this time will not likely be the large ones I normally work with, but rather people who have small to medium-sized lists, yet have demonstrated expertise. I'm toying with the idea of creating a launch template, meaning the emails, communications, etc., that I'll give my alliance partners. My thought is to have it largely plug and play so that I do all the heavy lifting for them and they won't have to work too hard. I was wondering if you've ever done anything like this, and if so, how it worked, and if not, what do you think? So I think what Dan's talking about is he's going to find some joint venture partners who have lists who will promote for him, and he's going to give them a sequence of emails and communications for them to send. And what I would say is that could be difficult to get them to do. Generally, it's in my experience that working with joint venture partners, and I've done this in a few different markets, it tends to be like herding cats. They're not that easy to get them to follow what you want them to do, because what you're doing is you're working with entrepreneurs, and entrepreneurs by their very nature, are not the most directable people in the world. That's why they're working for themselves. And so, you know, you can come to them and say, here's six emails. I want you to send this one out. Then I want to wait 3 days and send this one out and send wait 3 days and send this one out and wait 2 days and send this. And you can tell them all that. But whether they actually do it is a whole other thing. Even worse, you know, they very well might tell you they're going to do it, or, you know, because people hate to say no to people. But if it's like, you know, it's more like, you know, the thing that's better to do is ask them to send one email to a squeeze page or two emails to a squeeze page and squeeze people onto a launch list. Then you can then send the communications to. I mean, that's the way, if you'll notice, the big launches working in the internet marketing space, like, you know, when I do a launch or when I've done a launch, say, like in the real estate space, you know, we try to get all the partners to mail to a squeeze page. Then they mail to the squeeze page. The squeeze page squeezes people onto our list, and then we can control the entire launch process. It's a lot better if you have six emails to go out that you're the person sending the six emails, that you're not counting on your partner to send the six emails. I mean, you could give them six different emails to six different squeeze pages and, you know, just pray and hope that they send those out. But you got to make sure that first email and the first squeeze page are really, really good, because that's the only one you're going to get for sure. And even then, you don't know you're really going to get it for sure until they actually hit send. So where I'm going is, when you're working with partners, you can't ever assume anything. You always have to watch every step and just, you know, even if they, you know, swear in their mother's grave that they're going to mail for you, you got to always take that with a grain of salt. And if they tell you they're going to mail three or four times, you know, then maybe they will, but often they won't. So design your launch so that, you know, you get one email out of them and you're going to do okay. And, you know, if you can get two emails out of them, great. If you get three emails, that's fantastic. But, you know, don't, I mean, and this can vary by market. There might be some markets, or you might have relationships with partners where they'll just, you give them the sequence and they'd be happy to send it out. But it's pretty rare. Okay, next question. This is from Elliot in Los Angeles. Currently, I have an ebook, an active mailing list, but no blog. Do you think a better use of my first launch to ensure long-term success would be to use it to launch my blog instead of using it to make money selling my ebook right away? I'd rather make the money right away, to tell you the truth. Launching a blog, you know, the deal is do the launch, make the money, you'll activate your list, you'll get people excited, and then you just send, you know, launching your blog is just sending an email, you know, to your list that says, hey, I've got a blog now. Or, instead of writing a long email, write a short email and say, click here to go to, you know, to get the rest of the story and have that go to the blog. So, I mean, I don't know. Blogs are cool and all, but I see them generally for most businesses as being an ancillary thing for your business, not, you know, the sole focus of your business. And certainly there are some businesses where it is the sole focus. You know, I don't know your business. I don't know your niche. But in general, I'd go do the launch for the ebook. You know, it looks like, in this case, the ebook might already be out there, might already be for sale. So I would pull it down. I would add some bonuses to it. I would bulk up the package. I'd make it a more attractive offer, leave it off the market for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, whatever, then come out with a new enhanced version. This will build buzz in your business. I've seen this happen over and over and over and over. It'll sort of just build synergy and momentum in your business, and then you can come out with a blog after that. Okay. Next question. This is a good question from Sean, who's also in Dallas. To what extent do you recommend writing your email sequences in advance versus writing them organically as the launch progresses? Okay, I personally don't write them in advance. The way my brain works and the way my approach works is I write better email when I'm in the moment, when I'm reacting to what the market's telling me. You know, I'm reacting to the launch. It's, you know, I've said this over and over and over, the launch is a conversation. So you're reacting to the market. And you can't, you know, make it all up in advance because you don't know what the market is, how they're going to react throughout your launch. How they, you know, you're reading the blog comments, you're reading, you know, the responses to your emails. Maybe there's even people talking about your stuff on forums in your niche. So you're sort of reading the tea leaves, reading everything that's coming in, and you're reacting to that with your emails. Now, that being said, there's a lot of people that, you know, doing it that way is higher pressure because then you're having to create in the moment. And frankly, by the end of the launch, you tend to be, you know, pretty tapped out. You're pretty exhausted if you do it that way. So I know there's a lot of people that like to get stuff done way ahead of time. And, you know, if you're that way and you don't work well under pressure and you are very uncomfortable working under pressure, then, you know, write them out ahead of time. You know, I think your launch will be slightly, somewhat sub-optimized because it won't be that true conversation. But, you know, for your peace of mind, if that's the way you work the best, that's fine to be slightly sub-optimized. And there's nothing saying you can't do a hybrid where you write out everything ahead of time, and then, you know, if something else is, something's changing in the launch, if something comes up that you didn't, you know, that conversation goes a direction you didn't expect, you can always take your emails and tweak them or change them or replace them. You know, one of the things we like to do, and we haven't been great at this, but we like to do is go into a launch and have a sales letter. You know, often the sales, the reality is one of these really big launches where it's just, you know, one of these, you know, stop the internet launches like I've done a lot of them in the internet marketing space. We're still tweaking the offer right up until the last few days. And if you're tweaking the offer, it's hard to really write the sales letter if you're, you know, really messing around with the offer. And also you're tweaking the final positioning of the entire offer. And so what, you know, often in the last couple of days before launch, I'm sitting there writing a sales letter. Not my favorite thing to do, you know, on a tight deadline, but to get the best sales letter, that's what we often end up doing. But what I'll try to do is I'll try to start the launch with some type of a sales letter. It might not be a perfect sales letter, but it's sort of like the fallback. You know, it's the emergency. Like if it comes, push comes to shove and we're coming right down to the deadline and I don't get the sales letter done, then we've always got this fallback sales letter we can plug in. And so you can do the same thing with emails. You can go into the launch with your emails, you know, essentially done, with your sales letter done, and then if they need tweaking, you tweak them as you go into it. You know, that's personally, like with emails, I'm usually creating them on the fly, but you have to remember I've, you know, done well over 10,000 emails in my career. I'm pretty good with them. I can knock them out pretty quick, and I'm really good at tying them into the current market and being in that conversation. So you can really do it either way, you know, sort of based on what works best for you and your working style. Another question, when infiltrating blogs and forums during the pre-launch, do you suggest posting as ourselves and including a link to our own blog and our signature, or is there a benefit to keeping anonymous then later linking a link to the blog? Okay, so the first problem here is don't think about infiltrating blogs and forums. Think about going to the blogs and forums and adding value. And generally, I don't go to the blogs and forums in under a pen name. I go there under my name, and I just try to create value, and I try to do that ahead of time. I try to do that, you know, months before the launch, if you can. Just get a toehold. Go create a user profile and you know, every few days or once a week or whatever, go in and just give some real value. And, you know, if you have a blog or some other website, you can have a link to it, or you could just not have a link to it. But if you do that, if you create value over some period of time, then you can generally come back and, you know, be somewhat promotional. I mean, most forums, if you've been, you know, a good citizen and contributed, then you're going to get more leeway in terms of being promotional when it comes time for that pre-launch. And hopefully, you know, your pre-launch, your shot across the bow is a piece of great content. So you can go to that forum, you can go to that blog and point to your great content. And, you know, no one's going to, in general, give you a hard time over that. So I would, in general, go there, and I would do it under my own name, and focus on creating value. Okay, next question. This is from Bonnie in Chicago. And Bonnie says, could you please comment on eye contact? I've been told by people who've done recent launches that eye contact is more reliable than AWeber. Could you please advise which way to go? Let's see. I haven't personally used eye contact. I do know people. I've got friends that have used them. And I prefer AWeber. Of course, you might, maybe I'm biased. You know, Profile.com is my company, and it's basically, it's a clone of AWeber. It's basically everything you get with AWeber, you get with Profile. So I am a fan, but I was a fan of AWeber for, I don't know, 6 or 7 years or something like that. And, you know, I was a fan of them for 5 years or 6 years before I ever even got Profile set up. The thing with eye contact, and I don't have recent experience with them, is I know at one point they would allow you to import lists. And if they allow you to import lists, that might sound like a great thing. I know because AWeber, if you import your list, people have to confirm. An email will go out to them, and they'll have to confirm that they want to be subscribed there. So this is the deal. Eye contact does not require that. So that makes it eye contact sound great, right? The only problem is that means that lots of people can import lists. And if one of those persons is imports a dirty list or is a spammer, then you're basically, then that list is going to be blacklisted. And you don't want to be associated, if eye contact somehow, and I'm not saying they allow spammers at all, I'm not saying that at all, but if somehow someone imports a list and it's slightly not clean, then that casts any company that allows that list in a bad light. And if eye contact were to do that, and they, I have to be careful what I say here. But the bottom line is the more hardcore someone is, a service is about importing lists, the better their reputation is going to be in the long run. And AWeber is very hardcore. I am personal friends with Tom Culzer, the owner of AWeber. If I went to Tom and said, hey, Tom, I've got this list, can I import it? He'd say, Jeff, we're great buddies, but, I can't help you out. Sorry, you're going to have to do the same thing. They're hardcore about it. They are very, very hardcore. But because of that, they have this impeccable reputation with all of the, all of the, like the Yahoos and the Gmails and the Hotmails, all the people that that provide email, I guess an email service provider. They've got great relationships with those email service providers. And because of that, their email gets delivered. So in terms of reliability, in terms of email deliverability, they're the best. In terms of getting your email delivered quickly, they're better than anyone else I've ever used. I can't tell you about iContact because I haven't used them, so I don't know about the speed of their delivery. But AWeber is better than pretty much everyone else that I've ever used or ever been associated with or had a client use. So I am a fan, I guess I'm not even going to apologize for sounding like a fan. I've used a lot of different services, and I've had clients use a lot of different services, and I'm sticking with AWeber. Or Profile, if you wanted me to get a few bucks in commission. Let me see. Next question. Oh, this is the next question is actually similar. It says it's not really a question, but you could comment on it. I struggle with migrating my existing customer database into AWeber and their confirmed opt-in system. I was weighing the pros and cons of going with another list management service that wouldn't require my customer list to opt in, but decided to stick with AWeber. And I think that's the right decision. I think your choice of an email service, email list hosting provider is probably the most important decision you have to make in your business. Web hosting is important, but frankly, it's not that hard just to switch web hosts. But once you get an email list set up somewhere, it's relatively hard and painful to move. And so you got to make this decision carefully. And I know, you know, like I said, AWeber has this deal where if you bring a list in there, they're going to say, okay, great, you can bring this list, but everyone on the list has to confirm that they want to be on this new list. And that's, you know, it's a pain. And you're going to lose subscribers that way. But the subscribers you lose are not going to be your good subscribers. They're going to be the people that don't open your email anyways. So you really don't lose it. That's the bottom line. You know, I know a lot of people, there's a big argument over single opt-in versus double opt-in. I've been double opt-in, 100% double opt-in since about 2001. So I personally think double opt-in is the safest way for you to you go with your business. Now, some, like, if you're in the knitting world, like that's you're publishing in the knitting niche, then it's, you know, you could probably go single opt-in. Because the people probably, even, you know, your target market, half of them might not even understand confirmed opt-in. And you're probably not going to have to worry about some spam vigilante, you know, going after you because someone opted them in. In my business, in the internet marketing world, there's too many people, I'm too high profile. And frankly, you know, you could have a competitor mess with your business by just going in and putting a bunch of bogus email addresses or even worse, spam trap emails addresses on your list. And then, you know, I think it's a danger point for your business because then your list isn't as clean as it could be or should be. So I think that generally with email, the sort of the hard way is the right way. You know, the hard way is to go with double opt-in. For most markets or for some markets, and to go with a service provider like AWeber that forces a confirmation of all when you import a list. And I know people don't like that because they say, well, you know, like typically if you go with a double opt-in list, you're going to lose, you know, 20% of the people that subscribe will never confirm. And so, you know, if you get 1,000 people to opt in, you're going to get 800 people on your list, or maybe even 700 people on your list. And so people are like, wow, I just lost 200 or 300 subscribers. But the reality is that you didn't really lose them. Those are people that weren't going to open your email. Well, first of all, a lot of them are people that weren't going to open your email. A lot of them were bogus email addresses. People put bogus email addresses into your squeeze page. A lot of them are like spam bots going out there. You know, these crawlers that are just crawling out there, going in, putting in bogus email addresses, and you know, and I still haven't quite figured out why. But the reality is, if you go through and if you did do double opt-in, if you went back and looked at the people that didn't confirm, a lot of them aren't real people. So it isn't like you really lose 20 or 30%. You end up with a cleaner list. Now here's a secret that 99.9% of the people out there don't know. When you are publishing, you know, when you're publishing, it's all about deliverability, getting your email delivered. Your email list will have a reputation that all the service providers, all the email service providers such as Yahoo or Gmail, Hotmail, all those, they track your list. And your list has a reputation. And one of the measures of your reputation is not just, you know, is it going, well, I mean, they'll look, and if Gmail sees it coming into a bunch of bogus Gmail addresses, they'll assume you're a spammer. Then that kills your deliverability. Another thing they'll do is they will look at what rate your emails get opened at. So, like, if you're sending emails and they're not getting opened, that's a strike against you. So think about this. Say you went with a single opt-in, and all of a sudden, those 30% of people that wouldn't have double opted in, they're still getting your email. But they're not opening it because they're not good subscribers. They don't care about your offer, or their bogus email addresses, or their second email addresses that no one ever checks. That means your open rate's going to go down, and your deliverability will suffer. So I know I've been going on and on and on about this, but this is getting your emails delivered is a really important thing in this business. And so, you know, I know what I'm preaching here is goes against, you know, against a lot of conventional wisdom, and even the, you know, a lot of my friends, you know, my these other internet marketing guru friends of mine, they'll tell you I'm just plain old wrong on this. But I'll tell you, folks, I've been publishing via email since 1996, and I've made a fortune since 1996. And my business is pretty much driven 100% by email and email publishing. And I have new friends with some of the, like, the people, like the top deliverability experts in the world. And what I'm telling you is what really works. I think for most markets, double opt-in is the way to go. And a company like AWeber, which is really hardcore about importing lists, is also the way to go. So that's my rant about email lists. And I hope I didn't bore you too much, but this is important stuff. Okay. Next question. Jeff, do you recommend asking for a mailing address on a squeeze page in order to mail a postcard during a launch to get better results? You know, if you ask for a mailing address on a squeeze page, you'll drive your conversion down dramatically, like a huge amount. If you're going to do something like this, you would definitely want to ask for the email address first and then have some fancy programming. And this is programming I've never done or had done. It's not that fancy. But basically what you want to do is have a two-part form. The first part is gathers their email address, and then after they click the submit button, then it asks them for their mailing address. Now, that being said, I don't think this is the way I would go. We've had success with postcards. The way we've had success with postcards is when we have physical mailing addresses, but we don't have email addresses. Then we send out postcards that drive people to a squeeze page, and the squeeze, and so then we collect their email address, and then we run the launch through the email. So, you know, unless it's some market where people just don't read email, and I think there are those markets out there. I don't know what they are, but, you know, they're probably out there. I think for most, you know, 99% of the markets out there, you're going to want to use postcards to drive people to an email list and not use postcards in addition to email. I mean, I've never tested that, so I could be wrong on this. But for most launches, they're pretty quick moving. And getting out postcards in a timely fashion to have the kind of impact you want in terms of the launch sequence, it's going to be hard to do. Whereas with, you know, if you have a list of offline leads, maybe it's, you know, it's an offline doctor's office and they've got all these physical mailing addresses, but they've never collected email addresses, then send out a postcard, drive them to a squeeze page, offer them something cool, and get them to opt into the email and then run the launch off the email list. From Elliot in Los Angeles, what's the best way to apply product launch formula when I already have my ebook for sale on my site? I'm thinking about adding some bonuses and offering a discount on the ebook. Do you have any other advice? Yeah, I just I like adding bonuses. I usually don't like cutting price. It just goes against the grain. But I'd pull it down for a week or 2 weeks, add the bonuses, and then come out with a relaunch. And, you know, that's pretty easy. A really good bonus in this case would be do a teleseminar, you know, several weeks after the launch that answers the top questions that people put in. So give, you know, sell them the ebook, have them give them the ebook, run them through a survey, collect questions, then do a teleseminar. That's a great bonus. It's a great launch bonus because it's an event. A teleseminar is an event, and so you can point, you know, this is our deadline, so you got to buy by such and such a date to get on the teleseminar. Okay, I think I'm actually going to go to some of the, see if we can get some live questions that people are putting in. Question from Gordon in Dallas. With AWeber, do you use HTML or Java code? This is like when you actually create, what Gordon's talking about is when you create your actual opt-in form, you have your choice of HTML or Java. I think it's JavaScript, actually. I usually use HTML because we're often doing some fancy and it's really not that fancy, but we're inserting our affiliates, the affiliate code in with each subscription so we know where that subscription came from. And so we create a hidden field, and we're inserting it into that hidden field in the HTML. You can't do that with the JavaScript code, at least not to my knowledge. And so we generally use the HTML. Also, if you use the Java code, the JavaScript code, there will, you know, there some people don't have JavaScript turned on. I think it's a pretty small percentage, but there will be some people that will get errors with the JavaScript. The beautiful thing about the JavaScript, well, there's a few nice things about it. One is that people can't see your code. They can't see what the thank you page is, so they can't, like, look at the source code to see what your thank you page is, to see what the delivery page is. And also you get built-in stats tracking in AWeber if you use the JavaScript code. So there are some benefits to that. The negatives is you can't do the fancy hidden code insertion that we do, and most people wouldn't have a need for that. And then there will be a small number of people that have problems and are not able to subscribe because they don't have the JavaScript turned on, so they can't see your form. From Jason Ayers in Chandler, Arizona, what's your number one recommendation for building a list without joint venture partners? You know, there's a couple. Pay-per-click, depending on your market. You know, some markets it's easier than others with pay-per-click, like Google AdWords. So that's certainly one good way to build your list. Another way is just virally with just giving out, you know, this has been one of my best ways to build lists over the years. Just put out really good content and then, a squeeze page for people to get that content. I'm sorry, I just got distracted. Someone put in a funny comment. It said, well, the horse is dead. I guess I was beating that email horse pretty good. It's a pretty funny comment. Anyways, number one recommendation for list building, pay-per-click, or, you know, if you can just put out good content and have it go viral sort of through blogs and through forums. If someone opts into your list right after purchase, do you still do a double opt-in in the internet marketing niche? In this case, the person just bought something, and in order to receive the product, they have to opt into your customer list. I do a single opt-in for customers, especially, you know, considering that everything I sell is, the lowest price things I sell are $2,000. I do a single opt-in. I figure if someone's giving me that kind of money, then we have a legitimate relationship, and single opt-in is fine for customers. Okay, so just this is from T. Frank in Edmonton. So given your comments about not being able to import lists in AWeber, does that mean I have to go with iContact if I want to resurrect my previous list? No, you don't have to. You can import lists into AWeber, but people will have to reconfirm. So you import your list, the email goes out to everyone and says, if you want to be on this list, click here to confirm, and then they're on your list. So you absolutely can import your lists into AWeber, but they will have to reconfirm, and you're going to lose some people that way. You know, again, my contention is the people you lose aren't people that are going to buy from you. From Jason and Chandler, Evan Pagan and a number of other leaders use single opt-in. What do you do with your own list settings? Have you ever had any serious issues with single opt-in? Yeah, like I said, I've got, I think the world of Evan. I mean, I have, Evan is a good friend of mine, and he's an amazing marketer, an amazing thinker, amazing leader. The guy, I love him, but I disagree with him on this. I use double opt-in. I've been using double opt-in since 2001. I haven't had any serious. I don't do single opt-in, so I haven't had any serious issues with single opt-in because I haven't done it. I sleep better at night knowing I use double opt-in. This is from Fage in Far Rockaway, New York. There are really no forms in my direct market, and I'm starting with a small list, and will then hopefully work with JVs. How vital are forums, or can I just skip it? Yeah, if there aren't any good forums in your market, just skip it. And there certainly are those markets. Let's see. Roy will PLF 2.3 be online for the foreseeable future? I answered this earlier. It's at least 6 months where it's going to be online. Okay. This is from Barbara in Brenham, Texas. I have a blog with an opt-in box with a constant list of info products for sale, like DVDs. It's in an equine niche. Is that right? Equine? I'm not sure. And the DVDs are other people's for the most part. My books and DVD are on the right column, too. I'm working on a new product that I plan to launch. What about the old products? Do I take them down and relaunch? You know what? Let's see. So I would probably do a separate blog that is just the blog is only about the launch of the new product. So, I mean, if you're looking at what I do with my launch blogs, I mean, those blogs are just for launching. They're not like an everyday blog where I'm publishing on. And when I do a new launch for a new product, I create a new blog. And I think, you know, that way, you know, the blogs that, you know, are launch blogs, they don't have blog roles on them. They don't have calendars, and they don't have links to all these other different things. I mean, they're very, very focused just on the launch. They've just got the posts that are about the launch. And, you know, usually I don't even have categories on my blogs. So it's they're very, very simple blogs that people, you know, when they go there, if they click on any links on the blog, they're just going to take them to other things about the launch. They're not going to take them to links on other products. So I think that's generally the safest way to go, is to put up a very simple launch blog that's separate. And then, you know, the real focus of the blog, you know, the launch is all about your email list. And you're using the blog to send people to pre-launch content. You're using it to get social proof for them to, you know, get into a conversation with you. That's the focus of the blog. It's not selling other products. So if you were going to do something like this, I would probably, for the period, if you were going to use the one blog you already have, then for the period of the launch, I would really try to take down ads for any other products, probably even your other product. Really clean it up. Because really you want the focus of the launch to be purely about your launch and not to give people an opportunity to get distracted, to click on other links and to wander off. From Roy in Vancouver, will this 10-minute teleseminar be recorded? I arrived late. Yep, it's been recorded. We'll release the recordings on the PLF 2.3 website. We'll probably clean it up a little bit, so it'll take us a couple days, but we'll release it. This is from Elizabeth in Berkeley, California. You're talking about blogs as ancillary. Would you address which elements you think are the most important if one is only working part-time? Social networking, blogs, free events, product launches. The most important thing is an email list, in my opinion, and you know, building that, and all those other things, social networking, blogs, free events, product launches even, they're all, you know, the goal for those is to build the list. Every one of those can be used to build the list. And, you know, usually the best way to build a list is by having multiple methods. If you use all those and you use joint ventures and pay-per-click, so much the better. So always look to build your list. If you're doing social networking, use that to build a list. If you're using blogs, use that to build a list. And then you do a product launch. And, you know, as you build that list, you can just go back and do two or three product launches a year. And, you know, the sky is the limit, literally. You could just absolutely, you know, I've been doing this for years. And you know, following that model and, you know, have done millions of dollars in sales. And, by the way, I'll state, I started off very part-time. When I started this, it was definitely part-time for me. Okay, next question. Let's see. This is from Graham in Exmouth, the UK. I've been running a Forex trading service for 2 years. It is being closed so that I can do an update and reform it the way the service is offered. It is UK-specific due to time scale for trading. Also, offshore gambling is illegal for U.S. citizens. Should a country-specific relaunch be any different than a global one? No, I don't think so. you know, I'd say country specific would probably be in some ways a little easier because you know the languaging might be slightly different. So yeah, I can't think of any reason why that would be any different from a global launch. This one is from Umesh in Atlanta. Jeff, I have a financial services company focused on South Asian market. We are working with banks to offer electronic payments. I'm itching to use PLF in my market. Do you think it's a good idea? And when would we, let's see, when we see the mastermind groups? So it's a separate question. We're working with banks to offer electronic payments. I'm itching to use financial services. I'm sorry, I shouldn't have read this question because I just don't really quite get it. I'm not sure if you're selling, if what you're selling are financial services or if what you're selling are electronic payments, I'm sorry, just more details, please. This is from Susan, and it says, person set up their personal names along with their business. When is a good time to use an avatar name to keep anonymity, or in other words, a pseudonym? Do you suggest using your real name? I work full-time and want to start my own business because I think my company will be outsourcing my job. I'm not doing anything unethical, just want to keep it private. What do you suggest? There's absolutely nothing wrong with using a pseudonym. You know, we mentioned Evan Pagan earlier. Good friend of mine, fantastic marketer. He had a dating advice business, and he published there under a pseudonym. And I'm not totally sure what his reasons were, but I think it's because he thought his name was just a little too strange. So he went with David D'Angelo, was the name he thought fit the market better. But, you know, there's nothing wrong with doing that. I've always used my name, but, you know, that's maybe if I knew how big my business was going to get, maybe I would have used a pseudonym. Okay, next question. This is from Kate in Corydon, Indiana. So what about us poor schmucks who don't have a product? I've done affiliate marketing via article marketing. So with affiliate marketing, what you're going to need to do is you need to somehow stand out from the rest of the affiliates. So if you're going to do a launch around affiliate marketing, what you have to do is create a bonus or two bonuses, some type of something to set you apart. And the easiest way to do this with bonuses. And then run the launch. You know, if you're doing article marketing, hopefully you're using the article marketing to drive people to your list and then selling them affiliate stuff off of your list. Otherwise, if you're just doing article marketing directly linking to affiliate products, you're not really building an asset. There's no asset there. So if you're going to take those articles, drive them to your site, build a list off that traffic, and now you're building yourself an asset. Then what you do is you launch each of those affiliate products, but instead of just sending them a link, send them to a link that explains your offer, the extra bonuses they get if they buy through your link, and that gives them a link to go buy. And then just do it like any other launch. You know, do it for, you know, build up to it. And it's probably, if it's an affiliate product, you're probably not going to, do a 3-week launch, but you can do a 4 or 5 day pre-launch and then drive people to this offer, which is, you know, you get these bonuses if you buy through my link. And that will absolutely work. This is from Megan in London. I've put together a list from contact details from our related but separate offline businesses, an accounting practice. Do I need to get them to opt in when I start mailing them? They aren't getting any kind of regular newsletter or anything from the accounting practice. So what I would do is I would send them direct mail. And then I talked about this earlier. Send a direct mail. It could either be a letter or it could be a postcard. And then basically offer them something free and cool. Some type of report, you know, that they would really want, some type of, you know, information product that they would really want, send them to a link, get them to opt in to an email list before they get that cool thing. Now you've got your email list, and now you do a launch to that list. Let's see. This is from Doug in Yulee. Have you got any ideas for relaunching a product to previous customers? For example, a one-year membership that they have previously purchased. He says, by the way, I use the tax sale every year with success. Thanks. Well, congratulations on the tax sale. Let's see. You know, it's just, if you're going, it sounds like you're trying to get them to re-up to something they've already bought. So I think what you really want, in that case, you have to sell them on what's cool and what's different and why they should get it. You know, you always have to think about where they're at. So they've just gone through this one-year membership thing, and so you got to think about what they need at this point, and then, you know, put together an offer that gives them that thing. And so maybe if there was something that, you know, for some reason they didn't accomplish something, or they didn't get something out of it, or something was missing in their mind, or you thought of something else you could add, then put together basically sort of like a renewal launch where they, you know, if they sign up in such a period of time, maybe they get a discount since they're re-signing up and they get this cool bonus, but they got to do it next period of time. And, you know, so you're basically going to be using scarcity and building the offer. And, you know, just, and this is like a found money type of launch. I mean, you know, you're probably going along selling this product, and you know, you've got people that have already bought and they're not doing anything now. So just going back to them is really, it's just about creating the offer. Creating the offer that hits their frame of mind as past customers that, you know, whose subscription has expired. And thinking about, you know, putting yourself in their mindset, you know, and as the saying goes, entering the conversation in their mind and creating the offer that will get them to jump, and then just put a deadline on it, and, you know, you're built in scarcity, and go from there. This is Pat. Question from Pat. Do you, by default, wind up with your own copy of the lists from your JV partners? You don't end up with your part. What they do is they mail, so partner A mails for you, and say they have 10,000 people on their list. And of the people they mail, you know, 1,000 of those people click through to your squeeze page. Of those 1,000 people, let's say half of them opt in. Now there's 500 people that have opted in. They opt into your list, and you own that list. So now you've got 500 subscribers. And so if you can get 10 of those people with those size lists to each mail, that's 100,000 people being mailed, and say 10,000 click through, and half of those people opt in, now you've got a list of 5,000 people. That's how you build a list really, really quick. Then what you do is you track, through the launch, you're tracking those people. So if you make any sales to those people, then your partners get paid. But then after the launch, you still own that list. So that's why, you know, I often say, you know, the sales you make in the launch, they might be nice and be exciting, but in the long run, they're not nearly as valuable as the other things you get out of the launch, such as a list. I have done launches, you know, where I've put 40,000 people on a list in a couple of weeks. I did a launch recently where I put 25,000 people on a list in about 10 days. And it was because my partners mailed, and they put people onto my launch list. Oh, here's a question that came in about the mind maps that are, you know, that are part of Product Launch Formula and the way I create the videos. I use a product called, the mind maps are created in Mind Manager. That's a product from MindJet.com. Mind Manager is available for both the piece for Windows and for the Mac. Frankly, their Mac version is nowhere near as nice as the Windows version. I'm 100% Mac, so I notice things like that. There are a lot of other mind mapping tools out there, but that's just the one I use. I've been using for years. The videos are created with a couple different tools. One of them is called, again, I'm on the Mac, so I use iShowU, which is the letter I and then the word show and then the letter U. So it's iShowU. Another great application for the Mac for creating those types of videos is called ScreenFlow. It's ScreenFlow, ScreenFlow. If you're working with Windows, you want to be using Camtasia. That's the de facto tool for creating screen capture videos for Windows is Camtasia. There's also a Camtasia out there for the Mac and it, I probably own that one as well, but I've just, I like ScreenFlow. This is from Elizabeth Stark in Berkeley, California. I coach and teach writers working on novels, memoir, and other book-length projects. Do you think PLF would work for the release of a novel by a publisher? I think it would. I personally haven't done this. I can't remember anyone. I can't remember. You know, people have certainly done it with nonfiction. I don't know about a novel. The biggest issue, say from a publisher, so it's not a self-published thing. I would think the biggest thing is getting the support of the publisher. And you would have to put together some type of a bonus. And the bonus could be, you know, teleseminar book reading, you know. It could be, online book tour. Or it could be, they get a, making of the novel or the writing of the novel PDF or something like that. It certainly would help. I mean, if you did something like this and the author was already, you know, had some stature or a following or celebrity, then it would be really, really easy. For a brand new author, it's going to be a little harder. The product launch formula is a big, broad set of tools, and you don't have to use them all, you know, in the standard, you know, PLF style launch. You can literally use those tools to sell the book to a publisher. If you just use some of those tools, scarcity or the social proof. So you don't have to do a buy the book PLF style launch. You could just drop in some of the tactics and still do really, really well. This one is from Christina Hills in California. I run a live 8-module teleseminar / webinar series. I'm considering offering a home study version that would not give access to the FAQ calls for a lower price. I'm concerned that offering 2 price points will cannibalize my sales. In other words, people will automatically pick the cheaper price. Can you comment on offering a lower price version when selling a high price coaching like 8-module program? Christina, I would have the same concerns that you would have. If you use a classic sort of price skimming strategy, might be the way to go. Is if you ran the launch for the full out program, and then a few days, and then you scrubbed the buyers off the list, and then a few days later you came back with the cheaper version. But I'd be a little bit worried about offering the two of them on the same like order form, the same sales letter. So what I would do is I would do the launch for one, and then a few days later come back to the non-buyers and offer the lower price version. It's generally the way I would do something like that. From Daniel in Boise, with a seed launch, I can build my list, but how do I prime the pump? How do I get the initial traffic? What I'm asking is your preference among pay-per-click, SEO, banners, articles, press releases, et cetera. I would do all of them, you know, that you can do. But, you know, with a seed launch, you don't need a big list. You know, 200 people is plenty. 100 people you could do it with. You could probably do it with 30 or 40 or 50 personal contacts. It's probably enough. And it's not that hard to build that off of any one of those things. I mean, create some YouTube videos and, go post in some forums. It's just not that hard to build a really small list like that. You know, I'd certainly, if you can do it with pay-per-click, that's the easiest, quickest way to do it, in my opinion. SEO takes a little longer. Articles, I think, tend to take a little bit longer. Press releases are good. But I would do, you know, YouTube and forums, I think, tend to be the quickest and cheapest. From Lisa in Bayside, New York, do you have suggestions on the best way to launch a membership website that features private label rights products? Thanks. So first of all, launching a membership site is no different from any other product launch. Doing it with private label rights, you know, really isn't. You know, whether the content of the membership site shouldn't make a difference in the strategy of the launch. Now, in big picture, if you're launching generally private label rights products, 99% of them or 98% of them are not very high quality. So, I got, you know, I'd be a little worried about doing this. Make sure they're good. Add in something that adds value of your own. And so it's not like every other site out there that's got the same private label rights stuff out there. Otherwise, doing a launch for it really isn't any different. The thing is with a launch, you have a successful launch, you're going to pile a lot of people in there. So make sure it's something that that's going to stick, that's going to be good for them. Otherwise, you know, you're just going to run people into that program and then they'll all drop out. This is from Helmet. In Module 1, you mentioned no testimonials, no launch. How do you deal with this in light of the new rules and laws about testimonials? Well, let's just say I was exaggerating when I said no testimonials, no launch. Having strong results-based testimonials makes it a lot easier to do a launch, but that's just one of the tools, just one of them. And there, you know, I've done plenty of launches with no testimonials. Given my choice, I'd always rather use results-based testimonials, but you know, the FTC is definitely making it a little more uncomfortable to do that. These new rules or the new interpretation of the rules by the FTC, it's just over a month old. We haven't seen any action from the FTC. We don't know exactly what they're going to do with regards to this stuff. So I'm still definitely in somewhat of a wait-and-see mode. But you can absolutely do launches without testimonials. That was just a very catchy way of making a point when I said no testimonials, no launch. But certainly the new FTC guidelines that went into effect in December 1st do not mean the end of all selling and the end of all marketing. And, you know, there's plenty of selling and marketing and launches to be done without them. Another question from Helmet. Are you still using Synergix for your shopping cart and affiliate programs, or are there other tools you're using? Nope, I'm still using Synergix. And we're getting pretty long in the call, so I'm just going to take probably one more question here. We'll wrap it up in 90 minutes. This is from Human in San Diego. Hello, we are a high-end, edgy, and trendy jewelry company. Our product gets sold at Neiman Markets and a few other stores around the U.S. At the moment, our website has all the product detail except the price, so people have to request more information. We are getting our blog site ready as well, and we're getting a third site prepared that would actually be a shopping site that you could actually purchase as full e-commerce. So the question I have is, do we make the shopping site private, and you have to opt in to see prices and be able to purchase? Second question is, how does your PLF work for high-end jewelry company? Thanks in advance. Well, I personally haven't used product launch formula for a high-end jewelry company. So I don't have personal experience with it. But, I can't imagine it not working. So the question is are you asking about your e-commerce retail side, or are you talking about your wholesale side? And I think it will work for both. The retail side, I would think, is pretty easy. If you're doing high-end, edgy, and trendy jewelry, I imagine there's some exclusivity. So what I would do is I would get people to come to your e-commerce site and opt in to get to see your latest creations. And then, you know, once a week or once a month, you come out with a new design, or you feature a new design, or you feature a design that you haven't featured before. And then you spend a couple days talking about it, and then you have some scarcity around it, because naturally, if it's high-end and edgy, there's got to be a limited supply. And just, you know, say, okay, and so on Tuesday, we're going to, you know, open up. Oh, you know, we've got 12 of these pieces available. We've got 32,000 people on our list. And, you know, on Tuesday, we're going to open it up, and it's going to be a first-come, first-served. And so it's just, you could do this like a machine, week after week or month after month, and do the exact same thing over and over. Spend 3 days telling people about why it's so cool, why it's so unique, why it's so different, and why it's so limited, and then open it up and sell it. In terms of selling the wholesale, I think, you know, you could probably end up doing something similar. I really don't know how the wholesale side of your business works. And, you know, you're probably going to have to be a little more more subtle with what you're doing, but I bet you it could work in a fairly similar fashion. So I'm going to look for just one more question here. Okay, this is a good one from Christina in California. How do you manage squeezing teleseminars? Okay, so she's referring to another question she's got here. But Christina asked about doing teleseminars as part of your launch and squeezing a bunch of teleseminars into your launch. And so this is the reality of when you're doing a launch, and when you're doing an internal launch, the reason I love internal launches is because you get to control every step of the way. You can't guarantee everyone's going to read all your emails, but at least you can guarantee that your list is getting each email about each step of the launch. But when you're doing a JV launch, you can't control that. You know, say you have a 1 week, or let's just say it's a 10-day launch. So on day one, you want all your partners to mail because you got some really cool piece of pre-launch content. Then on day six, you have another really cool piece of pre-launch content, so you'd like to them to all mail again. So when I say day 10, it means 10 days before you open your cart. So day 10, or let's turn it around. Let's just say it's a 10-day pre-launch, and day one is the day you go into pre-launch, and day 10 is going to be the day you open your cart. On day one, you've got this great pre-launch content, you ask everyone to mail. Then on day three, you're going to come out with another great piece of pre-launch content. And then on day six, you're going to come out with another great piece of pre-launch content. And then day nine, you're going to come out with this last-second message that talks about the product. So you'd love your partners to mail on each one of those. So day one comes, and you open up, you know, your pre-launch. You got this pre-launch video or pre-launch content, report, squeeze page. You want all your partners to mail. And what happens? Well, you know, maybe a quarter of a mail on that first day, and a couple more mail on the second day, and some more mail on the third day. But by the third day, you already released that second piece of pre-launch content. Then you have some partners that, you know, they don't mail until day eight or so. So in other words, people are going to be coming into your launch throughout the pre-launch period when you do a JV launch. So you'll have some partners that don't mail until the ninth day. That's just the reality. That's the way life works. Because your partners are not sitting there hanging on, you know, you're just sitting there checking their inbox every 3 minutes to see if you sent them the email that tells them it's okay to mail for your launch. They just don't care about you that much. That's the reality. So you have to structure your launch so that hopefully, no matter where they come in during the launch, then they're getting the backstory. Sort of think about a TV show. Like a lot of these TV shows, these serials these days, it's like, you know, like if it's whatever, Survivor or Lost or whatever, it's a story that arcs over, it can be a year or 2 years or 5 years. And so how do they bring people up to speed that have just come into the show in the middle of the second year? Well, they'll do little flashbacks at the beginning of the show. So you'll have to think about doing that during your launch. So if someone opts into your second piece of pre-launch content, they didn't see the first piece of pre-launch content. So you have to, like, the email that goes out to them that welcomes them has to send the, you know, has to give them a little bit of the backstory and tell them about that first piece of pre-launch content and the second piece of pre-launch content and try to get them to confirm to go consume both those pieces of pre-launch content. So that's the reality of a JV launch is people are going to be coming into your launch at all different points during your launch. It's the same thing with teleseminars. If you're doing a teleseminar, you know, frankly, I'm not a huge fan of doing a ton of teleseminars during the launch because you got too many other things going on. If teleseminars take up a lot of time, if you're going to do teleseminars with like six different people and each one takes 60 to 90 minutes, that's a lot of time, and it's critical time right in your pre-launch when you need to be doing other things. So I usually avoid them unless it's a partner, a really strong partner with a really strong list, and we really think they can, you know, really, you know, do a lot of good for us. So I tend to avoid teleseminars. But if you're going to do them, you know, schedule them throughout that week and, you know that by the very nature of it, people, they're going to come into your launch late. So the teleseminar, I think the content you deliver in the teleseminar is going to have to address the fact that, you know, that they've missed some of the pre-launch content. So teleseminars, they can be really good. You know, a lot of times you'll do a teleseminar right with one of your best partners right before the open, or maybe, you know, what I prefer to do is do it with them on launch day. you know, the negatives of that is that, you know, they don't get the whole pre-launch content. They don't get on your launch list usually, but that way, you know, you can send them right off to the teleseminar and onto an order page. But generally, a lot of people use them and they use them effectively. It's just not my favorite thing because it's so time inefficient. One of the things we did in the one launch I did that wasn't in the internet marketing space was we created a teleseminar that it was basically a recording. And then it was me and a partner talking about the product and talking about the offer and talking about, you know, doing a whole pre-launch pitch on it. And then, but the person who was hosting it, the JV partner that was hosting it, they weren't part of that conversation. So we recorded that conversation, and then we had our partners, basically, they would get on a teleseminar and they would introduce us, and then they would click on the recording and they'd hear our recording, and at the end, the partner would come back on, put together a bonus offer, and send them to a link. So it was sort of an automated where we recorded it once, and then by recording it once, we, you know, then gave it to the partners, told them what to do in terms of creating an intro and an outro, and that way we were able to do, you know, deliver 10 or 15 different teleseminars, but we only had to do it once. So that was very effective. I didn't do any of the technical end of that, so I don't know how they handled any of the technical parts. I don't think it'd be too complicated, but that's a question I can't answer, is how to do the technical parts of that. But it, you know, it is a way to do a lot of teleseminars without using up a lot of your time. Okay. With that, I think we're going to wrap up this call. We went over an hour and a half, so answered lots and lots of questions, took a lot of these questions. We didn't get to all of them, but we got to, I think, the majority of the ones, especially the ones that came in today. So thanks a lot for tuning in. Hope you guys got some value, and we'll be letting you know about our next call soon enough. Okay, thanks a lot. Bye-bye.